This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 4th of July, 1957. The title of this lecture is Definition of Control. This tape is 57 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Hiya. Thank you. Hardly anything to discuss. Hardly anything to discuss at all. Except a few minor factors that might have escaped your notice. Now, having oversimplified it 1,000%, you remember in the last lecture, I just oversimplified it all over the place. Terribly oversimplifying. Now I'm going to overcomplicate it. I'm going to tell you about it now so that just nobody could understand what I'm talking about. This lecture is so complicated that I don't even know what I'm going to do just to get started on it. That's why I haven't started on it yet. Its complications are so extreme that as I glanced over my notes, I had several pages of notes. And somebody present doesn't believe me. If you notice, every lecture here is totally plotted out. Would you give me that Congress program you have right there, please? I'll show you, yes. Thank you. Now, I want to show you, every single lecture here has a name. Every single one. It wouldn't be a Congress unless I pointed this out to you. Says lecture number two. Now notice there was no lecture number one. I'm now engaged in giving you lecture number three. Now that shows you these lectures did have titles. Actually, I had a terrible thing happen at the London lectures. I was over in London, Royal Empire Society Hall, just a few months ago, and they had a wonderful Congress over there. I was all surrounded by plaques of empire. As a matter of fact, I was so overwhelmed every time I walked in the front door of the Royal Empire Society Hall, what with all the footmen and handmen and so forth. I was confronted every time I entered the building with the Cecil Rhodes room. And Cecil Rhodes' bust and all kinds of busts. And we actually were one of the first gatherings that the organization had there after it was completed. It took them years and years and years to build it back after the war. It was all bombed to pieces, and they'd build it all back. And when they mounted up all of these empire plaques for South Africa and New Zealand and Australia and everybody, and I was standing up on the stage, you see, surrounded by all this grandeur, I got terribly overwhelmed, and it was very upsetting because I had to explain to them that I'd forgotten all of my Congress notes. And there were three or four people there who believed me. It spoiled the gag. But if you will notice here, it says lecture number three. And lecture number four, number five, number six. And then there's lecture number seven, number eight, number nine, then 10, 11, and 12. And I probably won't give anywhere near that number of lectures. As a matter of fact, I probably will ask you if you want some group processing tomorrow night instead of seminar. Well, now that just shoots the schedule all to pieces. I guess my secretary can just tear up the rest of those notes. I want to talk to you about a very formidable subject, though, under the heading of lecture number three, a very formidable subject, one which nobody in the United States has dare approach for a very, very long time. And all the better auditors did it. And all the poorer ones didn't. But the nation as a whole would rather not. This subject is practically unmentionable. It has a lot to do with babies. It has a lot to do with anything. As a matter of fact, the words I'm about to give you now would probably never be used in a drawing room. The material which I'm about to give you has not even been discussed as itself between married couples. Now, Freud in 1894 broke with Breuer, who taught him psychoanalyze, and announced the libido theory. A three-letter word adding up to sex. And Freud brought sex, they used to say, out of the bedroom into the parlor. That was his contribution to humanity. But what I'm talking about has never even gotten to the bedroom. This subject has been known to make strong women quail and men weep. It's probably the most controversial as well as the least mentioned subject today in America. I'm sorry I have to go into it at this time, but I do. It's for your own good. The subject is control. You haven't looked at that yet. What I've just said about control is totally true. If I told you bluntly that the mission of a Scientologist was to control within an inch of his life everything in his vicinity, you'd say, ooh, it's not for me. People would run, shedding their coats and hats rather than to come to you for processing. Control what? You mean this fellow's going to sit there and control me? No, no. Child psychology. New way of pronouncing the word. By the way, it's being pronounced that way more or less uniformly throughout the world today. Child psychology. You didn't think I could do it again, did you? It has given America a vast gift for which they all ought to be shot. That is, the child must learn how to express himself and must never be interfered with at all times by nobody, no place. And should just go on and on and on and on. You go to call on somebody in America. It shows you this deadly virus, you know, the deadly virus that was just imported by the Public Health Service from China. They assured everybody they weren't going to let it in, and then they took a boatload of sick people and unloaded them into California, and they've now got it down there. Anyhow, all of this deadly virus has reached deeply into the American home. You go to call from the average American family. Pretty wonderful. You sit down. You do one of two things. You either fight Junior off all night, or you look at a TV program that you always avoid at home. It has become one of the favorite indoor sports of America to fight off the children before they fight your head off. Now, one of the interesting things about it is it will undoubtedly result in tremendous cultural advances. Very certain it is that you, in future years, would be able to be heard in the middle of a roaring crowd if you whispered. so great has been your practice of trying to talk across the top of your neighbor's children while you were calling. Now, let's agree that they overdid it in the old days. But I don't think they knew anything about it to overdo it. What is it? Control. In other words, we have a whole cult. I hate to refer to psychology as a cult because it's reactive. It is a cult, definitely, though. It's a German cult. They have various other kinds of cults, Germany. They had the Young Volk and the Volkswagen and all kinds of cults in Germany. And one of them was psychology. Psychology cult, they call it over there. And they imported it over here, but it's got this factor of they're all animals anyhow, and there's nothing you can do about it, so why try? And that's psychology. That's child psychology in particular. But I'm not talking today about children. I'm merely talking about this deadly virus, don't control anybody, sort of a philosophy which has swept the length and breadth of the land. America is losing on the international front simply because she nationally is unwilling to control anything. And she's going to get bit. They hired me, they wrote me a letter and hired me especially here a few years ago to go out and shoot Japs to make them more amenable to democracy. They hired some of you, too. They paid us money to go out and do this. Now they back out and they say, well, you boys, do as you please. And let's do it. Go out and train with the Red Side and do anything you please. Blah. Japan had methods of controlling its populace. It had an organizational structure there, a social structure. It was very interesting. Women had a role, men had a role, and so forth. Well, they just shot that to ribbons. Women are all free, and the men are all free, and everybody's all free, and they've got a constitution they can't even read. And then we say, all right, there you are. Go ahead. And I'll bet you that some politician in a few years gets terribly surprised when it goes, boom! And they say, what happened? Why, those nasty people. No, it meant that there were existing methods of control of that particular culture. It meant they were chopped to pieces. No other control level was substituted in. And then they went off and abandoned it. Now, my point here is not international relations. I couldn't care less, because if you could always ask the questions of international relations, is what relations? There aren't any. It's trouble with international relations. Camouflaged whole, everybody talks about our international relations. You mean our international inability to communicate? International relations was that psychosis which grew out of the fact that most other nations speak different languages. All right. But we are very allergic here in America to this idea of control. Very allergic. After the war, they were talking about sergeants had to have a big brother attitude toward the troops, and soldiers didn't have to salute and so forth. Well, there's maybe everything wrong with armies, but armies do run according to certain rules, so that makes them armies. You know? I well remember when Christianity hit the Roman army. Long 7th Legion time. Oh, that's on the back track. They got so bad that they were so out of control that they wouldn't even wear armor in the battle. The Roman army, after a while. And they either would run away or simply stand there and say, kill me, I wish to be a martyr to the cause. And that was the end of Rome. Well, if you depend on some channel of control and you don't reinforce it, don't take care of it, why, don't worry or don't wonder, please don't be surprised if everything goes to the devil suddenly. I mean, if there is a set of control factors and you cease to exert them without substituting anything else for them, why be surprised if the thing blows up? You understand? Control's a dirty word. Much dirtier word than sex. Marriage couples fence without ever using the word really. They fence on this subject all the time when they're having a bad time. And it merely comes down, the argument boils down to this. You're not supposed to control me, I am supposed to control you. And on the other side, you're not supposed to control me, I'm supposed to control you. And this argument can go on for years and years because it happens to be two opposed viewpoints. Usually never occurs to such a couple that as long as she can't control herself, he'll have to try to control her. And as long as he can't control himself, she'll have to try to control him. And they're going to get awful busy with control the more they chop out each other's controls. And if they just reduce each other's controls to zero, we have the standard American home. Now you say, these are very interesting words you were saying, Ron. These words are pretty dynamite-y. It's really not safe to talk about this dirty word control right out in front of the public. It's not safe. Well, I pay you the honor of not being public. I wouldn't swear at you. Now let's take a look at this. Let's take a look at this. What do we mean by control? Well, to most people it means I will beat you until you do as I say. That's control. Well, the funny part of it is that isn't control at all. I will threaten you until you comply. That isn't control. If there's anything new under the sun, it is Scientology's new understanding of positive postulation. All control is positive direction. And when it gets mixed up with I will beat you unless you obey the postulate, I will kick you, fine you, jail you unless you obey what I have said. When it gets down to that, control has already long since disappeared. All these laws which carry with them a penalty are assuming that the government is no longer in control of the people. Isn't that an interesting observation? Because control, we discover, cannot carry with it duress or punishment and still be control. Ah, but you say, and here's the weak one. The do-gooders down the years say, well, we mustn't punish anybody, we mustn't dress anybody, we mustn't command anybody, we mustn't control. No, those things don't follow. We shouldn't punish people is not consecutive to we shouldn't control anybody, but usually is. What do we mean by this? We have discovered a zone and area of control and direction which we call tone 40, which means positive direction with total intention. Considerations, start, change, and stop. We found out the reason people hate control, it's become a dirty word, is because nobody can. They say, if you don't do so-and-so, I'm going to hit you in the jaw. That's control? No, that isn't control. That's saying, because I can't control you, I've got to hit you in the jaw because I don't want you, because I can't control you. See? See how that works out? Actually, I tell you, when control starts hitting a dwindling spiral in a government, you get a very interesting state of affairs in a government. And somebody was talking to me about this the other day. I'll just mention it to you. I brought this up. You get the government using duress to enforce compliance. Now, the only people who disobey in a government are those who can't take orders. So the reason the government issues orders and punishments is so that the people who can take orders... Oh, wait a minute. Let's look at this again. All these speed laws and everything like that are put out so as to get the people who can't take orders to... Now, just a minute. If they can't take orders and directions, Doesn't matter how many laws or how many threats are made. They'll never hear about them. Doesn't matter how often they're jailed, they'll never reform. And we get the enigma of our present criminal system. It is a criminal system. Now, people who can take orders read the law and they say, well, I'm not supposed to... and they read the law and they look it over and they say, well, all right. Go along with it. Reasonable law. Go along with it. Of course, if they put a four-pass highway down with no curves on it and say 10 miles an hour is the speed limit, this is already a sort of a stupidity that would rather disgrace the idea of control because it doesn't make good sense. So the order and direction connected with it doesn't make good sense, and that's invalidative too. But these people that cause accidents and these people that have a rough time are the people who run through the stoplights because they can't read them. Well, isn't that fascinating? You mean to say all these duresses and laws and legislation and everything else are being launched to inhibit a group of people who cannot receive an order or a direction and wouldn't read them anyhow? So we get the dwindling spiral of the general populace being victimized by an errant government that cannot cope with its inability to control its population in all strata. The dwindling spiral of government is simply the failure of a government to control its population. And it signifies its inability to the degree that it threatens and gives duress. Promises duress unless. And you get this fascinating, you get penal systems, and you get reformatories, and you get laws, and you get courts, and you get jurisprudence, and so on. Boy, they're nothing but vias on a control line, let me assure you. Because if you really knew what control was, you would not try to beat to pieces your havingness. You see that? I mean, a government says, well, we're going to execute you, they say to this fellow, because why? Well, we couldn't control you. Going to execute you because we couldn't control you. And the government is minus, at that moment, one person. They just shoot their havingness to pieces this way, don't they? It's rather silly. You say, well, if we didn't have restraints of this character, man being a beast and being naturally an antisocial animal, because just look at a little baby, they bite. And man being an antisocial brute, beast, dog, woof. We're going to have to use a switch. Got a K-Rap. And the more we beat him, the more social he becomes. Yet the very people who do that say the more we beat him, the more social he becomes. If they went down to a prison, they would find the people in it were the people who had been beaten. Can it be these guys themselves are kind of nuts? Can it be nobody's been thinking about this for an awfully long while? Can it be man was totally ignorant of this whole thing? Well, let's get on with this idea of control. You try to sell somebody on the idea of control, and he's liable to flinch. He's liable to flinch for this reason. He doesn't know what you're talking about. The word has been totally misused, disabused. He hasn't a clue. But here's a way to explain it, which is quite interesting. You ask him, have you ever been controlled by somebody? I ask you, have you ever been controlled by somebody? Didn't like it, did you? Well, how would you like to decontrol that area of your life? How would you like to pull out those old bad 8 C's that have been run on you? And recontrol that area of your life yourself. You'd buy that, wouldn't you? In other words, if you had a father that ran very bad 8C, something like that, or ran none at all, which is worse, and he left a whole area of your life completely littered up with this sort of thing, yes, that's an area of control, isn't it? Well, you'd love to decontrol that. Knock it out. Knock it flat. And substitute your own control in that particular area. That'd be a very good thing to do. Well, you could explain it to people like that, and they'd have a little more idea what you're talking about, but control to them would still be bad. All control is, in essence, is positive direction. And the only way you can have positive direction is when it is on the basis of an optimum solution. The optimum solution stems from the eight dynamics. The eight dynamics you know well. Now, an optimum solution is the greatest good for the greatest number of dynamics. What do we mean by good? Substitute survival and you've got it. The most survival for the most dynamics is the best solution always. And as long as positive direction is leveled on this that we call the optimum solution, it is very acceptable direction. Isn't it? Very acceptable. We tell somebody, no matter how practiced we are with controlling bodies and so forth, we say to somebody, jump over that cliff. He goes and jumps over the cliff and he hits the bottom of it and he's dead. He gets another body and somebody says, jump over that cliff. He says, to hell with you. Isn't that the way it works? So that commands or postulates which do not forward an optimum solution, the greatest amount of survival on the most dynamics, are bad commands. And that would then be bad control. And you might get the intention through the first few times, but after a while, people would say, nuh-uh. They would set up a resistance to direction, which could then become so psychotic that they would resist all direction, and you'd have a criminal. A criminal is simply somebody who resists all direction. What's this make him, by the way? This makes him totally directed. How do we work that out? Well, that which ye resist, ye connect with. So that we get this idea of positive direction, and we find out that communication goes hand in hand with positive direction, and a person to give commands or to control adequately must himself be capable of receiving a communication. Quite important.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
The old timers, way back when, making a big pitch out of this, trying to steer people into purgatory before their time, always said it another way. Ye who would learn to command must first learn to obey. And when we've got you obeying, good, we'll tell you to jump over the nearest cliff. This is the way it went. If you would command things, you must first learn to obey. But if you're going to command things, you certainly better be in communication with them. You ever try to drive a car while you were sitting two or three blocks away, your body too? You and your body are sitting two or three blocks away from the car. Well, you don't like cars, so you're going to direct and command this car. Yet you're not going to go near it. Not going to have anything to do with it, but you're going to command it. Oh, no. See, that just doesn't work. But you have to be in communication with that which you would command. Now, here's what's interesting, too. You mustn't be flinching from commands it gives you. Right? Automobile commands you to turn it back on the road. See? Very simple method of control. By the way, there was a fellow, or two, several of them, all Scientologists, who have been driving lately. The only people in the world who have been driving lately. The other people have been driven. People sit behind the power steering wheel of with power brakes, with power motors, with power navigators, with gimmicks that follow the white line, providing it doesn't turn black. And the car takes them down the road, you know. They're not there, you know. What's this thing? Crash! They say, I didn't disobey any law. I was driving my Cadillac at 10 miles an hour right down the middle of the road, just where I should have belonged. I was not near either ditch. I was obeying all the laws, 10 miles an hour. And somebody came right down the freeway going 60 and hit me square. Well, this fellow that was driving this Cadillac, I don't know why it is all Cadillacs have to go 10 miles an hour. And all cheap cars have to go 79. Cadillacs can go 79. The cheap cars can go 10. Now, this fellow told a lie. He said, I was driving down the road at 10 miles an hour. No, he wasn't. Even though he was sitting behind the wheel, even though he had a driver's license in his pocket, which I think they have slot machines now in almost any station or so forth, you put a dime in, you get a driver's license out. You see, if they issued these things and they were really valid licenses and they really did enfranchise people who could drive to drive, they would be exerting control on the populace, and we mustn't have that. Now, the fellow had his driver's license in his pocket, and he was sitting behind the wheel of the car, and everything looked just as though he was controlling an automobile. Let me assure you that the bulk of accidents occur when the automobile is controlling the driver. He was being driven down the road by a car. And because he sort of has some trained responses that he picked up years ago, it's just the other cars are going along and he can duplicate those. It's quite amazing, this duplication of the other cars, the method of driving. The other car's driving in the lane, so the fellow drives his car in the lane. You see, his car follows the other car because the other car, you know, the machinery is driving. It's very interesting. Very interesting to watch. Fella crosses over the white line accidentally, see? Crosses over the white line. It's quite interesting to notice that the two or three cars behind him will also make the same mistake. And when they put up these white crosses alongside of highways to show people who got killed there, the white crosses multiply at that particular spot. They say, there's where a car killed a man. So the car sees the white cross and kills another man. What I'm telling you is true. These white crosses always multiply. Now, this is a case of something controlling a person. Now, if he's totally unwilling to be controlled by a car, he can't drive it at all. If he's only willing to super control a car and the car can never control him, this is kind of weird. It's also an unworkable situation. Because the car could be going off the side of the road and he would not notice it was taking him off the side of the road, so he wouldn't do anything about it because he was unwilling to be controlled by the car, and we have an accident just as the person who is not controlling the car at all would have an accident. You see how these things go together? All right, we look this over and we find out then a control is a somewhat give-and-take proposition. A person who accepts control, who can accept control, who can accept communication, who can accept postulate and direction, is the same person who can direct. Because the channels are open out if they're open in. It's just as true as this. Now, it's true enough that a person can go on controlling things after he becomes slightly unwilling to be controlled. He can go on almost controlling things after he becomes very unwilling to be controlled. He can put up a show. He can put the Cadillac in the middle of the road so that it is driving him down the middle of the road, and he says, I'm controlling this Cadillac. It's a very interesting thing. I'll show you what, I'm not talking about cars, but it's quite amusing if you want to vary your driving. One, if you want to kill yourself, try to drive totally in present time with each action, totally independent, right then, recognized as necessary right then, done right then, and on no automatic action at all, no machinery at all. You just do everything there is to be done at the moment you do it. That's quite amazing. It almost kills you for the first few hundred miles. And after a while, you really start driving a car. The point is that you have to have an intention to take the car down the road. And it's a very weird thing that you could just teach somebody to do this, and as long as he can get away with it without getting the ridge kicking his teeth in, why, he has a ball. You say, now, why don't you take this car down to that next turn? And then you take this car around that turn. And then you take this car up that next straightaway. Hey, get some old knocked-down, knocked-to-pieces Chevrolet, and it starts flying like a bird. It's quite fantastic. He starts taking the car down the road, you know? It's quite interesting. He has an intention to put it up the next mile. Drivers who have accidents have only this much acquaintance with intention. The intention built in on the assembly line by Henry Ford. Later, manufacturers have not built in any intention. Well, what is this intention? What is this control and so on? What is this positive direction and so on? Well, it's just all the same breed of cat. You say to that speaker over there, you say, stay there, you know. Well, you could say that, and you sometimes find somebody does that. There are people around who, if you ask them to tell that speaker to stay there, right, in that position, would say, oh, why should I do that? It's already there in that position, you know. Why should I tell it to stay there? Because it's already there. Everything is already there. Life is prepared for me this way, and I just sort of go through it. You know? That's the way life is. Now, here's the funny one. You ask that person if he enjoyed the music that has just come out of the speaker, and he will either say, uh-huh, or what music? If he can't get the idea of placing it, controlling it, doing something with it, then he's not going to get anything back from it. You get that? I mean, it's the way it is. Now, you take the control of a body. Here's a vast subject. But if you realize, I just showed you a thetan, all right, now, a body, in most cases, is busily controlling the thetan. Well, there's nothing wrong with this as long as the thetan knows he's there and knows it. But when it becomes totally unconscious, he's not there at all, everything becomes wrong with it. You walk down the street, well, to some degree you're being controlled by a body, but to this degree you certainly are. There's a path through the woods. The body has to travel on that path because it gets scratched and muddied and and it gets dirtied up, why, you don't send it around through the swamp and the trees. You see what you do? You send it up the path. Got that? Well, you are controlled to the degree that bodies cannot go easily without paths. So you say, well, then the path is controlling the body, too. That's right. But if you, at the far receiving end of all this, are totally allergic to control, you'll probably make the body walk off the path or into the trees or drown in the swamp before you'll listen to a body controlling you to that degree. So, to some degree, a body controls the thetan. Well, when a person refuses absolutely to be controlled by his body, when a thetan refuses completely to be controlled by his body anymore, and so on, well, he doesn't control his body anymore, and he himself just goes into sub-zero, and that's that. After that, bodies walk around, join the army, and run for Congress. They do all sorts of things. Such a person becomes what an old-time Scientologist calls an operating GE. Body being a genetic entity. Well, here's an interesting condition of affairs. Who's going to control this body unless somebody is there to control it? You say, well, if Papa and Mama lay in enough machinery... This is really what the society sometimes tries to do. If they just lay in enough machinery and get enough continued conditioned responses, Pavlovian child-raising approved by the American Psychological Association. We're going to sue them for that someday, by the way. Make them give up the use of the word as fraudulent. Two fraudulent things. Psychology says psyche-ology, see? It's a study of the psyche, which is the soul or spirit. And all you'd have to do is get them to admit that there wasn't, and they'd have to give up the use of the word. It's fraud, public fraud. And you think a fellow couldn't sue on that basis and win, but as a matter of fact, we probably could. Here's this fascinating condition of this fellow totally conditioned into the idea that his boss and his mama and his papa and his schoolmaster and so forth are responsible for those control factors which he experiences. And he goes through life like an automaton. Well, listen, Papa isn't there and Papa didn't lay in enough sensible machinery to control him through every existing situation he will ever meet. And Mama isn't there anymore and Mama won't control this person through every existing situation this person will meet. And the headmaster isn't there anymore, and this headmaster isn't going to control this person through every situation this person's going to meet. We get an average citizen. Bitter, bitter truth. If you take a large strata of men and try to sort out of them somebody who actually effectively can do something about something. See, they're all doing what somebody else, you know, who isn't there anymore, control. It just doesn't make sense anymore, you see. And these people do all sorts of things. I've seen this happen. I've tried to teach somebody to add up a column of figures in some different way than they were taught. Well, I was actually trying to teach the head of the accounting school the person had attended. See? Because the person wasn't there anymore to be taught. Quite amusing. And listen, even if he were there, the head of that accounting school probably could not have been taught very much about accounting. Don't you see? He would have said, I know the subject. I learned it for my master. Well, that's fine. So then you would have had to, when you were teaching him, actually teach the person who had taught. You see where we're going? We're going in the direction of nobody there, total unresponsibility. Control being done by tradition and perdition. And this is the way it would look. This is what would happen to people. And what happens to people who just abandon the whole idea of controlling anything, of directing anything, of doing anything. I don't know. They're kind of, life is a sort of a chute, and somebody dumped them onto the top of it, and they go down the chute. If they get to the end of it, somebody buries them. Somewhere on the chute, they might have awakened for a moment, but the probability is they never found out. It would be a funny day some people alive today would find out they were on that chute or alive. And you can do this as a Scientologist. It's very, very amusing. You can take acknowledgement all by itself, and you can start working on the effect scale, a new scale I'll have to tell you about later on in the Congress. You tell somebody, good, good, fine, good. Just stand in front of them, you know. You say, good, fine, okay, all right, okay, thank you, good, good, all right, good, fine, thank you, good. All of a sudden, they'll say, or just break out and cry horribly large tears. Say, you know, I've never been spoken to before. Now, you don't see this happening much in Scientology because the Scientology people, for the good reason, not that they've been educated in this at all, but because they had to have some quiver of life in them to walk into this subject. But you take somebody who's just plowing around on total automatic. Okay, you start this with them. You will have given them a point on the chute when they found out they were on it. Most of the time, they didn't want to know. All right, what does this add up to then in terms of control? Control is a dirty word, a thoroughly dirty word, because it's been thoroughly dirtied. When I say they have a pitch, they had a curve when they gave out the information. They twisted it. They perverted it. The information of that was discovered in past ages about the mind and so on. To use it for a control factor. Well, I'm merely saying that somebody violated an optimum solution. In other words, they tried to control people to their detriment. They tried to push them around, and eventually they forgot that control was tone 40, always, and they came downscale to where control was the exact meaning of punishment. Control and punishment became the same thing, because when these people controlled something, they did so with the end view of hurting. The end view of punishing or upsetting or spoiling an organism. And finally, postulates themselves in positive direction itself became itself nothing more nor less, nothing more nor less than punishment. So man has drifted away from control. But it's a dangerous thing to drift away from, I assure you. Very interesting. If you don't want to live, why don't control anything? If you don't want to be controlled by anything at all, why go to another universe? If you don't want to be controlled against your will, which is to say, against your best interests by something else, then you had better learn control well enough and learn to control well enough that you can consciously and knowingly accept or reject whatever control comes your way. And that requires that you be in pretty darn good shape. You see how that would work out? There isn't any avoiding this. You can't drop out of the game. You could possibly rise out of the game, but you couldn't drop out of it. Do you realize the only reason anybody gets an engram in restimulation is he gets his attention on it Well, what is that engram doing to his attention? What is that picture, that cat, doing to his attention? Huh? He's got it. Picture goes here. His attention goes here. Here he is. He's perfectly free of the picture of a cat. What's controlling his attention? A picture of a cat. Well, how come a picture of a cat could this irrationally control his attention? It's because he doesn't want to be controlled by cats. Believe it or not, that's the reason why his attention is fixed on it. He's got it there so it won't control him. And then he says, I don't know anything about it, and I've forgotten all about it, so he won't know that he's got it there, so it won't control him, and he forgets about it so that he won't notice or be bothered by the fact that it totally controls his working, sleeping hours. You see this? It's very logical, isn't it? Isn't that logical? If we just keep it there, it won't get around to where it controls us. Total resistance, you see. It's the resistance that keeps it there. So what does a body do to a theta? To a marked degree, it controls him. What does an engram bank do to a theta? What does a reactive mind do to a theta? Controls him. Well, let me assure you that until he finds out that it's possible for him to accept control, he will continue to keep the picture of the cat there and the body there, so that they won't control him. Silliest thing you ever heard of, but that's the way it is. You show him that by control he will not to be annihilated, that he can't accept a positive control without dying at once. And he says, what do you know? This fellow's been controlling me for 45 minutes and I'm still here. And reverse-wise, he then finds out, with further processing, that he can control something else, himself. And these factors, one against the other, worked in a processing session, bring a person up to a point where he is not totally resistant to control, and where he is not totally obsessed with controlling. And the end product is that he can control something. He starts taking the automobile down the road by intention. He starts talking it over with his wife rather than worrying about whether or not she's controlling him. Funny part of it is he starts controlling her. But he can only start controlling her at the moment that he gets slightly willing to be controlled by her. And that, unfortunately, is the catch in the whole thing. We have answered the question, what is good auditing presence and what is good auditing address to the situation, when we say the auditor must exert positive direction, which must not be thrown aside by every circuit which jumps up in its way. In other words, the auditor simply works to get through the idea to the preclear that these controls and so on aren't going to kill him. The moment the preclear's bank moves in the road of it, the circuits move up, service facsimile moves in, everything else. And the auditor keeps right on, and the service facsimile blows up, the bank blows up. It's very interesting. Fantastic. What is a service facsimile but an old, tired mechanism with which to control people? Now, what kind of a way of controlling people is to lie down and be three-quarters dead? This controls people? No. I tried it once. I was lying down, and I said, now I will be three-quarters dead. And everybody, therefore, will jump across the desk. And they didn't. They didn't. They stood around. They gave me some attention, but they certainly weren't under control. So I think this is kind of an aberrated mechanism. I don't recommend it. But the service facsimile is used as a control mechanism when the person can no longer control things. So therefore, every sick person is a person who is no longer able to control his environment or the people in it. It's only necessary to give him a certainty on his ability to do so once again for him to become well. This, amongst other things, is the secret of psychosomatic medicine. But in fact, we don't practice psychosomatic medicine. We just make people well. Here is one of these things that came up and became very important, is very important, will continue to be very important. And that is this factor, which we will have to call, just to convey some vague meaning of what we're talking about, control. We actually don't mean control the way people mean control at all. We mean a new thing, which means a positive direction in present time from one being to another with the end view of matching up to the optimum solution. The greatest good for the greatest number of dynamics. And positive intention, optimum solution, positive direction, and wonders are worked. All a magnetic personality is, unless it's somebody who's had a magnet installed by a psychiatrist, would be somebody who could pervade an environment with an intention. That'd be all there is to personal magnetism. He could pervade an environment with an intention. It's just as easy as that. Not an intention for yesterday, but an intention for right now. You understand this a little better now?
Yeah.
Well, you'll be hearing a lot about it. I hope you do. I'll see you all tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you.